It's 9 o'clock, the first Friday of the month. It's time for the Plant Rant, made possible by Baker Orchards at Centuria. Here's Sandra, the plant lady and guest.
And guest. Good morning, everyone. And a little belated, but happy May Day, Beltane, that May 1st day. And hope everyone did something nice and celebrated or got a May Day basket or had a fire, did something to celebrate. So, but we are going to have a full time slot here, so I'm sure everyone's heard me talk about Beltane before. So Debbie Elmer is joining me again as my co-host. Good morning, Debbie.
So good to be here. It's an exciting day.
And we have friends with us. So my friend Gretchen, who actually, her and I, the foundations of my horticultural career or whatever, were started with her through the University of Minnesota, where we learned probably 1,000 varieties of plants together and survived all of our college days. So good morning, Gretchen. Thanks for coming on the air.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. This will be fun. And then Scotty Angel from St. Croix Outdoors is also here.
Absolutely.
So good morning, Scotty.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For coming. And you might wonder why we have someone from St. Croix Outdoors coming on, but we're going to talk today about food plots and seeds. We might talk a little bit about some seeds, starting with Gretchen at the end of the show if we have time. And Scotty's going to talk about food plots, which is something I don't know about, but I know I've been, so Scotty and I shoot archery together, and he's part of St. Croix Outdoors. But when I've been there recently, I've been noticing all these big tubs of seeds, and I'm thinking, why is St. Croix Outdoors selling seeds? So what can you talk to us about? What's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the obviously St. Croix Outdoors is kind of more revolved around the hunting and fishing side of things rather than, you know, having plants around your house or whatever. So, you know, main part about hunting and, you know, deer and just all the animals doing better is having food out there for them throughout the whole entire year, and just how important that is to having good results out there and seeing critters.
And is it to promote like diversity of what they're eating, so they're not just eating the old corn out of the field? Or
yeah, absolutely, having a variety of stuff out there is super important. You know, it's crazy when you go and have different sections of your food plot and certain things, certain times of the year they will hit this and they won't touch that. And so on and so forth throughout the whole entire year. It's pretty impressive.
So normally I ask the question, like, can you explain to our listeners who don't know, but honestly, can you explain to me about a food plot? Because I don't really know much about this.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not really always, you know, at least for us, it's not about getting the actual animal shot. It's about making sure that they're taken care of, and I like to diversify the food plots in the same plot and try and revolve the stand around the, you know, so as you rotate your crops, you know, year after year, your food plot, whatever you're planting there, you want to have your stand location within, you know, reasonable shooting distance of that food source. So depending on that time of the year, what they want, whether it's early season or late season, you have something there within range.
So the goal, okay, so you're planting the food plot with the goal of raising a lovely, healthy deer that you want to harvest, mm-hmm. right, with hunting.
Yep, eventually.
But you're making sure they have the diverse food source. So, like, is your plot like a garden bed? Is it, like, what's kind of the average size, or does it vary? Or are you intermixing it among some other, like, native vegetation? Like, what does this look like?
Sure, yeah. So I mean, some of our plots are up to 4 acres.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so we do 2 acres of corn, 2 acres of beans, and then and we plant that, you know, conventionally we do tillage and then dragging and packing and making a nice seed bed for it. And then other plots are, you know, that acre to 2 usually. Some of them are even smaller. You know, we have, so then that would be like the brassicas, peas, beans, and oats, and that kind of stuff.
And then the brassicas are like cauliflower, like,
well, like a turnip looking thing.
And like radish. Cabbages and, okay, radishes,
yep,
and things like
yep.
that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. Root, more root vegetables.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then like peas and oats and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Late planted beans, so they'll only eat the leaves on them. They won't grow any pods, but they like that in the early season.
They like the leaf. They're eating the foliage. And you don't care because you're not producing it for a final bean.
Yep.
You're growing it for... So that's why some of those containers at St. Croix Outdoors are so big, because then you need seed for an acre or 2 acres.
Yeah. And I overseed it usually. Usually the whole thing I'll overseed in rye or oats later in the year, just so that way there's super lush vegetation coming up, new growth, and just so that way there's plenty there, and then it'll be up to 300 pounds of the acre
of
seeds. So
can you describe more what overseeding is?
So you already have the plot established, and then you just go back over it with just overseeding super heavy. It's just over top of the plot that's already established there. You don't want to plant it too early, otherwise it'll overtake the rest of your plot.
So is this after, say, if you're planting in the spring and it's already, the deer have already eaten what's there, you're seeding again, or are you seeding at the same time, this overseeding?
I'm seeding after it's already established.
So are some things coming back from year to year and you're overseeding? Or you're, okay.
No, you're fine. Yeah, you could do that. So say you have a clover plot, and then you have, you know, some dead space where either the deer just ate it out completely.
Pulled the roots out, too.
Yeah, and it's not coming back. You could overseed into your clover plots. I guess the way that I do it is I let the rye or the oats grow up in the spring, so that way there's still cover for the critters throughout the springtime, and then there's food too, and like I'm encompassing everything, birds and whatnot, just every animal species out there. So I try and take care of them all, not just for deer hunting.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. Well, and I feel like having those things there, that's going to help protect your soil too. They keep the integrity of your soil. That's holding that soil in place. You're not going to have a bunch of wind erosion, because obviously if this is a 4-acre spot, that's pretty wide open, and then you're keeping your soil, topsoil intact, and that's not blowing around. And
yeah, you don't want to barren for very long. You want to have good weed control, but you don't want to leave it just bare dirt for months upon months. And most of our deer plots are, other than the beans and corn, I put them in usually at end of July is when I put it in. Usually July 28th I try and do. So then that way you can't let the brassicas grow too long, otherwise they just overmature and don't do the deer any good.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah.
So at St. Croix Outdoors, are you planting the food plots, or are customers coming in and buying the equipment and the seed, or how does that work?
Yeah, we just sell the seed there, so customers come in and buy it, but they have a lot of questions. And so then, you know, I try and just talk them through it. I wouldn't help buddies out and stuff like that too, it's not something that we, not a service that we provide.
How small of a food plot is effective?
Well, that's totally dependent on the amount of deer that you have around. I mean, if you're in a big woods area, and you don't have a lot of egg fields around you, you're gonna want to do a little bigger one. We got a lot of deer in our property, so I mean, it's probably 9 acres of actual food plots that we put in every single year for the deer, and then there's probably another 1.5 or 2 acres of either screening, so that way we can access stands, or switchgrass for cover for birds and deer and everything too.
So I've met some hunters that are wildly excited about food plots, like they spend the whole winter plant, and there's other hunters that it's not even on their radar.
No. So yeah, they're
is there something
the
that, yeah, where do they learn about it somewhere? Or what's the turning point or the lever for that?
For a lot of hunters, either they don't realize it or they don't want to stick the money or time into it. They just want to go out and sit in a stand, and they don't care if they shoot anything or not. I mean, I don't care if I shoot anything or not either, but I like seeing the deer eat in our food plots, and I like to see them doing well, and I like to see them, you know, just out there. So
I was was an adult until I learned that hunters are some of the biggest conservation groups mm-hmm. on in our nation. Mm-hmm. And do you find that to be true with your customers?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. A lot of non-hunters don't. They have no clue what goes on out in those woods. They don't realize when animals are not doing well or whatever. They just don't see it. They don't understand it.
And this sounds like it's different because I know, like, people would, you know, want to get a pile of apples to bait the deer, and you're not supposed to bait the deer. But this isn't baiting. Like, you're creating a healthy environment for birds and other animals, and sounds like taking care of the soil and providing them with diversity. So it's not like this food plot's like, okay, you're going to gather all these deer into this 9-foot square like people do when they dump the pile of apples down.
Yeah, the corn.
And now, like, what, they're eating an apple, and you're... So, like, this isn't anything like that. I mean, you're talking 4 acres plus the additional 5.
Yeah.
The other eight. Yeah. So, like, this isn't localizing those
No, and that's all spread out throughout the property, too. So, we don't bait, obviously, and no matter what, it's legal. Even when it was legal, we didn't. And the problem with that, too, is that only... You're not taking care of the deer. All you're doing is trying to drag them to your stand.
Right.
In the woods. And then, too, that's how CWD is spread by saliva, I believe.
Yeah, and they're all eating out of that
same
pile
little
of,
spot.
Yes. Yeah.
Even if you spread it out and do all that, you know, long, you know, it's still, they're still eating mouth to mouth at certain points where this is spread out over acres.
I had no idea.
Well, I know that's why this is so fun because, like, I know nothing about, like, I hear food plot. I'm picturing this, like, 9 by 9 or 12 by 12, like, square. And I know, I think we've talked before, like, you were planting, like, I don't know, rutabagas or beets or some of those. And, and like, so I was aware of some of this, but I'm just picturing, like, oh, a little small vegetable garden that's for the deer to come eat this vegetable out of the ground or whatever. But this is nothing like this.
No, it's pretty vast. And I think a lot of it that deters people is... obviously the amount of work, but then the expense, and it's seed and spray and just everything that goes into it, equipment to do it.
What's the most time consuming part? Is it clearing the area or?
So a lot of ours were already fields. So we just turned them in from just regular farming fields into food plots. We've been lucky there.
Because you had the access to the land already set up in kind of more of a traditional farm way where you didn't have to clear out a bunch of trees or a bunch of...
Right, yeah, and we were lucky because there was a lot of smaller fields in there, too. So
like just, sectioned off with the natural perimeter of some trees, which they're going to want that, too, to have that shelter and that protection.
That's exactly it. So it wasn't just a, you know, 40-acre field that we're just, you know.
Could have been housing development, could be food plots.
Right, exactly.
So, naturalized area.
You go and you cut all the trees down and get all the stumps out. But then in doing that, too, you end up introducing a lot of that clay ground, you know, clay soil that's, you know, deep below. I guess maybe not clay, but just not topsoil up to the top. And then you got to try and build that soil back up. And that's where having that rye or oats growing or like buckwheat throughout the summer, that's a soil builder. So that'll help improve the soil.
I love so much. This is so exciting because this just fits right with the theme of my show of always trying to do things as sustainably as possible. And I talk about that a lot about feeding our soils and so much of, no offense, I love all of you farmers. I'm grateful for you, but our traditional farming methods remove our topsoil, take out the natural bacteria and all that versus these cover crops and green manures and things that are actually going to build the microorganisms back up, keep the topsoil on. I mean, we'll never get our topsoil back, people, so when that blows away, it's...
Yeah, isn't it like 80 years to build an inch of topsoil, I believe it is?
I don't know.
So,
and I know we had the people from Serendipity Acres and they do a lot of mulching, and I know like with the wood chips, I mean, you can build up soil over time and it's very impressive, but it's important that we take care of our soil and
Absolutely.
Have living soil, and then you don't need all the inputs because it's taking care of itself.
Mm-hmm. And with our property too, it's you know, highly erodible land, so we have waterways that we just leave in grass and everything too.
To hold, because that using that root system, mm-hmm. so the water isn't pulling it away.
Exactly.
So the water can go through, but the roots are protecting the.
Yep, exactly.
I love that.
Yep, yep. And then certain spots we put rocks in where there has been washouts, and just to keep it from washing over and everything too. There's a lot of work that goes into it. We're pretty serious.
This is so cool. So Scotty and I, like I said, we shoot archery together, and you know, I've known you in that capacity, mm-hmm. and this is just a topic that I know nothing about, so this is so exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be fun to go out there and show you guys what we do, because it's super impressive.
I would love to go. Yes, please.
Yeah. It's about every weekend throughout the summer. I'm out there. I don't usually miss a weekend.
Okay, so you know, we kind of talked a little bit about the time frame, but it's like me with gardening. I don't think of time. Gretchen came out yesterday and was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you've been out here. It's like, you don't even know how much time goes by because you're enjoying being on your property. And I'm sure you're seeing the birds and the critters coming to enjoy the seeds and the things that you're creating out there, right? So it's,
you're
just gratified. I mean.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
And what do you do? Like, so when you go out there on the weekend, like what kind of tasks or what are you doing when you go out there? What's that look like?
Oh boy. It always changes throughout the year. You know, like I'll be mowing switchgrass for a while, and then I'll be, you know, we'll be hauling rocks to this location because it's starting to wash out. Maintaining the property overall, planting in certain spots on the trail where we've been driving and you know, killed the grass there or whatever.
So we're a little restoration.
Yeah. And then hauling gravel to certain spots where it just erodes so bad, nothing grows there. So we try and make sure that stays.
This is a whole own kind of gardening. We need a name for this. Yeah. This is so cool.
I did think this was just going to be like fancy baiting. Like
I did too. Yeah.
No, it's not at all. It's really integrated. Yeah. It's part of how you view what is important to you as far as hunting and how you interact with your land and your family and the animals.
Mm-hmm. And the ecology. Yeah. Very ecological.
I didn't expect you to drop any native seed plants either. Mm-hmm. Like, and you have.
Annie's used that. Some like scientific names and some brassica, some fancy things.
So we also have Gretchen here, Sandra's longtime friend with a degree in horticulture.
Yeah.
And as far as having a conversation about seed plots, is this something you've ever talked about?
I have never heard of it before today or before yesterday.
Yeah. But of course, Gretchen lives in the city, so there's not going to be, I mean, Gretchen's from St. Paul. And
But I love it when this type of crossover happens and we have a different crew in here and things like that occur where you say, wait, we're doing the same things. And you and I have been talking the past couple of months, Sandra, about germination of seeds and how different things are happening outdoors, and it's spring and we're looking out there and now you're going to be planting these seed plots. As you've heard what's happening with these seed plots, is there anything you're thinking about that's going on in your brain with germination in the springtime and overseeding?
Well, I do have questions about both the, like your springtime activity and then like tell me like how that overseeding works once you've got something established.
Sure.
How many times a year do you go out and do that? Like,
okay, yeah, I guess it's all dependent. So I try and leave the stuff up in the spring, whatever I had overseeded the prior year, and I always do that Labor Day weekend. After Labor Day weekend, unless it's an emergency out there, we don't allow any machines out in the woods. If we do happen to get lucky and harvest a deer, we'll maybe take out, we got an electric ranger, but that is it. So we don't do any work out there after Labor Day weekend. So it's always a rush.
And is that for disturbing the deer or disturbing
deer.
The ground? Okay.
You're
wanting it quiet out there?
It's all the animals too. It's
okay.
Everything's involved in that. So in the summer, then I'll go and go and spray. And I don't know how you guys feel about spraying and everything like that. I kind of figured that'd be a hot topic, but so that's just for weed control, and that is it. You know, the deer will eat weeds, but they die in the first couple frosts, and they're no good to them eventually. So,
are you select spraying though, or what's your approach to that then?
I try and try and wipe it out and start with a clean slate, because no matter what, you're still going to have weed seeds germinate even after having other stuff in there. I mean, planting rye is nice because rye is a natural weed suppressant, so you don't have as many weeds.
Very cool.
So I try and plant in some sort of buckwheat, and buckwheat is nice because it grows up and it provides a huge shade canopy, keeping the soil moist and keeps the weeds from coming up. So then, and then you try and have that grow for about 8 weeks, if you can. But then on...
Before they eat it, or what do you mean?
deer don't eat buckwheat that much. I disagree personally with having buckwheat in seed mixes. There's a lot of them out there. Because the buckwheat, if you do have it up in the fall, it'll die. It'll absolutely turn brown the first frost.
Okay.
Even a light frost will kill it. So I disagree with having it and having had full buckwheat, you know, acres of buckwheat, they don't really hit it that much. So they mostly leave it alone. I have seen them out there, but it's not hardcore. So then what I do is I oversee, or so then I have the buckwheat standing, and then I have my plot sectioned off. So in buckwheat is kind of nice too, because you can see where you walked in it. It's really stocky and it's kind of weak. So then as you walk through it, you can see all your tunnels of you walking.
So you don't mind using it as a straight species and controlling it, but you prefer to not see it in a mix because now it's winding up.
Yep. And then it'll compete with your other plants that you want.
So it kind of has its purpose.
Yeah.
But as an individual.
As an individual, soil builder, weed suppressant, keeps moisture in the soil. And keeping something there, you don't want to have your ground totally exposed and weed free throughout the whole summer until you plant, and for your fall.
Well, and this is so interesting. I was thinking about this because, okay, right? I'm thinking this is a great topic for spring. This is when we plant our seeds. Gretchen's been staying with me for the week, and her seed babies are at home under the care of her family. And I know you've been a little worried that making sure that they're, you know, getting home, make sure their seeds are alive, but this is exciting because you're doing a lot. July, Labor Day weekend.
Like, oh yeah, it's all year.
You have a late like seed starting season, which is
unconventional for what everybody else would think. And that's just because we want the way that they grow, and the speed that they grow at. You can't plant them in the spring and expect them to be there in the fall. So I leave the buckwheat standing. I seed my brassicas into it, and then the peas, beans, and oats I seed in at they're all mixed together. I think it's, you know, 50 pounds of peas, beans, and oats, you know, each. And, I seed those in to it as well. So I have it all standing still, and then I spray the buckwheat with glyphosate Roundup, because it doesn't hurt the seed, and then I pack it, so then the packing knocks over the buckwheat, so it's already going to be dead from the spray, right? But you want to pack it so that way as soon as the seeds germinate and it comes out of the ground, you know, it's available for sunlight. So that what that buckwheat also does is when you crush it, it's full of water, so then it a lot of moisture is already sitting there, and then it's covering the soil, so that way it's providing a nice seed bed then.
Well, it's keeping the seed kind of safe, right? Mm-hmm. So it's adding some moisture.
Right.
It's kind of holding that seed in place and protecting it.
Yep. And then so below that buckwheat, so if you look in there, you know, as it's standing, you see a lot of soil. Like it's exposed. So then when you pack it, you push the seed. You make sure that it has good seed to soil contact, and then ends up taking off.
Good. How are you packing it?
You can do a whole bunch of ways. If you don't have, so we have just like a cultipacker. We have a couple different ones just because we've just been bought them throughout the years and trying them and
figure out what we like. What's a cultipacker? I'm learning so much today. I have no idea what these things are.
There's a lot to it.
Can you do it with your ATV, or do you need farm equipment?
So a lot of it's done with a lot of my plots like this, I do just with the side-by-side. I don't use, and you could do it with a truck if you wanted to.
And you can do some DIY up north, kind of drag some across a field.
Yep, okay. Exactly, yeah. So, Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything crazy. You could even just use your four wheeler tires to. You know, it's just a lot more driving around and packing and everything like that. Just takes a lot more time. So we use that packer. It's like 10 foot wide, and it works really nice.
So when you talk about your, you said there was like 50 pounds of each type of seed.
Yep, all mixed together.
Yeah, and then how much acreage does that cover?
So that's 150 pounds of the acre.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So I got them all figured out exactly which one is this amount. So then I try and, you know, my cedar holds like 25 pounds. So then I can kind of figure out as I'm going. It doesn't have to be perfect. But, you know, you want to have that for that. You want to have it be super thick and lush growing. Where the brassicas, you're doing, I think, like 6 to 8 pounds to the acre. So you're barely seeing seeds come out. And if you go any much higher than that, they're just going to compete with each other, and you won't have very big bulbs, and you won't have very big plants. So, I mean,
good to know that ratio.
Yeah, exactly. It's super, super important. Seed rate's super important.
You're not seeding perennial plants then, so this process is the same every year?
Yep. So I do this every single year. Yeah, these are annual plots. We have some clover plots out there. You know, most of our stuff is seeded every year, because I mean the brassicas per acre produce about the same tonnage to the acre, I believe, as clover does, but that's all produced in like 8 weeks, and it's all utilized right at the end of the season, and then they'll usually hit the bulbs in the spring then.
Okay. Too,
so they're still eating on the brassica bulbs in the springtime, but so the clover, I'm not a huge clover guy. I do think it's important to have on a property, but it keeps deer there, you know, it keeps everything there year round. But as soon as, it just doesn't seem like they hit it very hard. They're hitting my other plots way harder than they are hitting the clover plots.
How long has St. Croix Outdoors been doing this, offering seed mixes?
I believe he's been doing it for, I mean, as long as the store has been around, I guess.
Okay.
I guess I don't know. I've been around.
We'll have to ask Todd that.
I think it's 41 years.
Cool.
He's had the store. He used to be down in Taylor's Falls, and then I forget, 96, I think he moved it up to the current location it is now.
So, and just so folks know, so St. Croix Outdoors, actually, and thank you, St. Croix Outdoors, because they are one of our underwriters. St. Croix Outdoors does support WPCA, and we really appreciate that. And they are right across from the Peapick and Flea Market, so on the corner of Y and Highway 8. So beyond the top of the hill, I guess, depending upon which direction you're coming from. But just a great store, huge archery range, which is how I started getting involved with Anthony. My son got me there, and, hey, Mom, you want to try shooting? Well, I turned out to be kind of good at it, and we just finished up our third season, so they do a great job with their indoor archery range, and then they have the whole, you know, full bait and a gun, you know, gunsmiths that work there. Everybody kind of has their own area of expertise, so depending upon when you stop by, you know, we've got our people who are really good at the archery and the gun folks, and but stop in sometime. It's so much, it's kind of a little overwhelming. There's a lot there, and as the seasons change with ice fishing and summer fishing, and there, it seems like there's always a lot happening, but
it's a busy place.
It's a cool spot, but yeah, if you're heading out there, I mean, I know a lot of people go to the Evil Empire, so I'm sure they drive right by St. Croix Outdoors on a regular basis, and just stop in. Super friendly, super friendly folks, so it's fun, but this is so exciting. And so if people are interested in doing this, I mean, I've seen little containers, but do you have those full 50-pound bags of some stuff, or do you order it for people if you know they want it, or how does that
work? Yeah. So I started, when I started doing food plots 4 years ago myself, I ended up going through this company called Northwoods Whitetails. They're out in Michigan.
Okay.
I just last year, I used to go through another guy for it, another dealer in our area. And then he quit doing it, so then I ended up picking it up because I had the storefront there, and then with a loading dock. So I started selling seed through him. So I try and have seed around, but a lot of the guys that do heavy amounts of it, we get in touch before I do an order, and I'll order a whole pallet in.
Right, so you kind of know, you're getting building this up, and you're willing to be like, hey, let me know what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do the bulk thing. You've got the loading dock. You've got the ways to move it around, and so.
Yeah, and then we have other seed manufacturers in there, too, so.
Well, this
there's
is
an assortment.
This is fun. I feel like we could do this again in the fall or when you're starting to plant.
Yeah,
we could talk about it. So, as always, we have run out of time.
It flew by.
Debbie, Gretchen, Scotty, Bob, of course. Thank you, everyone, for coming on Plant Rant. And June will be what? The 8th year anniversary, I think?
I think so.
The 8th time? Yeah, anyway. So, who knows what fun we'll have in June. But, all right. Thank you. And yeah, stop into St. Croix Outdoors if you have more questions and they can tell you more about this.
And all made possible by Baker Orchards
at
Centurion.
Thank you, Baker Orchards.
It's 9:31.